Good morning, and thank you for inviting me. When I was asked to come and give a talk on this very short subject of making a GRB dread, I said, sure, I will come. But the more I think about it, the more I come up with stuff like that. What does it mean, making a GRB jet, making a GRB, making a jet? If you know how to make a jet, you are very close to make a GRB, because GRB is phenomena related to the jet. So I don't know what to say. Well, let us pretend that we know how to make a jet, and this is what I will be really talking about. And I will leave to your judgment if I'm giving you any indication how to make a GRB jet, and then if there's anything we can learn from making a GRB. Jets are very common, and one would argue that, so what's new? We've been observing jets from almost all systems accreting onto a compact object. So we have jets in star formation regions. We have jets when we have binary stars, and jets when we observe AGN, as we heard this morning. Jets are everywhere. So GRBs are very special jets. So the big question then is, how to make a jet and how the GRB jet differs from all the other jets. Hence my question about relativity. Does the GRB jet have to be very, very fast? Typically, when you say that if those walls could speak, you can solve many mysteries, especially murders when bad things happen in chambers. And I don't know too many walls, but those walls here can speak because everything is recorded and you can go on the web and listen to the walls. What I'm talking about is that last year, during the late spring and early summer, there was a whole program devoted to accretion and outflows and producing jets in general. So I will be borrowing from that general area of producing outflows and jets a lot. This is meant to be a review talk, so please forgive me for saying too many simple things. But we are after two general populations of GRBs, short ones and long ones, and I will be focusing on producing a jet in long-lasting GRBs. The two populations can be explained by two types of events leading to GRB. It's the mergers of two compact objects or a collapse of very massive star. And I was very disappointed to hear that, yes, there is a connection between GRBs and supernovae, but cases are not that many. And we still have to put many, many question marks. But the basic idea is that if we are dealing with events so powerful as GRBs, we have to refer to the most efficient way of generating energy. And it cannot be a thermonuclear reaction. It has to be accretion onto a compact object. A compact object. You want to accrete at a very high rate mass on a very small, preferably a black body. And you also don't want to have a lot of fuel, but you want to have efficiency, eta here, to be relatively high. And there's no reason to believe that efficiency here can be between, say, 10 or even more percent. So this is it. If we are talking about producing or explaining an event that can emit a lot of energy per second, we have to refer to that. In GRB case, we also appeal to things like relativistic boosting and geometrical channeling to go away from isotropic to anisotropic emission of energy. But there are challenges. In GRB, we are not only after the amount of energy released, we are after also the quality of it. it has to be of certain spectral energy distribution, and it has to last for a certain amount of time. And then the spectral energy distribution can have to change with time, as the observations indicate. Those problems of quality can be solved when we refer to relativistic effects, that in the plasma frame you emit X-rays, but then they are boosted to gamma rays. That's element number one. And element number two, that proposed by Rees and Mazars, but also other people, the so-called the fireball model. Now, I am a big admirer and student of history, but my view is that the fireball model and relying on neutrinos, this is all driven by our successes as a military civilization, that we know how to blow things using atomic bombs. This is all the generations of people who've been building, developing weapons like that, and we know that it can work. Now, to be a little bit controversial, I will leave for more experienced people in this area to review the fireball models. I will focus on considering what are the effects of magnetic fields. One of the reasons I want to do it is for pedagogical reasons. It's because fireball-like models are typically applied and used to explain jets only in GRB context. All the other jets in astrophysics, some of them I already mentioned, refer to other things than neutrino physics. They refer to magnetic fields, and they refer to the magnetic pressure. And this is a generic picture of the compact object in the middle, accreting gas through a flattened accretion disk. And in direction perpendicular to the disk mid-plane, you have a collimated outflow. Typically, when you talk about the unification model for AGN, people draw or use sophisticated simulations done in Hollywood, Bollywood, adding outflows from the disk and clouds falling in and out. But this is the generic picture. I told you that I will be talking mostly about the collapse model. In the collapse model, situation is not as clean and is this picture. It's because we are supposed to be in the middle of the star. So all the space around the disk is not dark. It is mass, very dense material falling onto a compact object. So this is one of the second challenges, excuse me, in explaining GRB jets. We have to make them very, very fast. Plus, we have to make them out of the very dense star. In almost all astrophysical context, we are dealing with fairly simple, clean case, that if you know how to make a jet, its propagation is relatively simple, because it is propagating through the relatively low-density medium. Here, the jet is to be propagating against gas, which is falling onto a compact object from all directions. So what I'm trying to say here is that any model trying to explain jet production in the collapser context, the jet has to be strong and powerful from the very beginning, meaning when it was young, plus it has to be powerful when it was small. So this is a movie which Mitch Bigelman and I came up with when we were talking about a collapse of the rotating envelope onto a compact object in the middle. And this is purely adiabatic hydrodynamic inviscid case. Just to see what will happen when you have so-called Bondi problem, but you change it by adding just a little bit of angular momentum, and this segments of the line indicate the rotational axis. So the cloud is spherically symmetric. Everything is spherically symmetric, including the initial info velocity, but there is tiny little bit of angular momentum. We quantify this tiny little angular momentum by saying that the centrifugal force is at the Bondi radius is a very small fraction of the gravity or pressure. So at large radii where the gas is rotating, centrifugal force is to be neglected. Another way of measuring the rotation, which is very useful here, is that the angular momentum is so small that if the gas is falling onto a black hole, conserving specific angular momentum, the gravity will be balanced by the centrifugal force just outside the last stable orbit. So initially it falls in as you would expect. Things were spherically symmetric. And then certain changes occur in the density distribution. Here, yellow is the highest density, red is the medium, and green is the lowest density. What we see here is the formation of the rotationally supported torus, which starts to orbit the black hole. And regardless of the angular momentum distribution and its range, the torus is made of gas which has a fairly fixed constant angular momentum, which is very close to the critical one. The critical one is defined in a way that if anything has lower specific angular momentum, it will disappear behind the event horizon. And this is the torus. Now, so this is the element which you saw in the generic picture of the accreting system with a jet. What you see here is that in the place you expect a jet, there's the dense gas which continues to fall onto a black hole. So if you want to have a jet coming out of this initial configuration, you have, generally speaking, two choices. One, you wait until everything which is here is being accreted and this region will be evacuated. Or, which is more challenging and I think more appropriate to study a real system, to produce a jet from here powerful that will penetrate the infalling gas despite of its high ram pressure and density and so on and so forth. Sticking to the hydrodynamical limit, Andrew McFadden and Stan Woodley explored the collapse model where they basically studied exactly the same thing, which is an envelope which is nearly spherically symmetric and it rotates. What they did to study properly microphysics in the middle of the star, they added sophisticated equation of state, so contribution from degenerate electrons and photons to make the equation of state stiffer. And they also allow the gas to cool through neutrino emission. Photon emission is to be neglected because we are talking about very, very dense regions, meaning very optically thick. And also they added photon integration. Now, when you have a picture like that here with the torus inside, if you don't have a mean to transport specific angular momentum, you will be stuck with the torus forever. And as you probably all know, transporting specific angular momentum outwards, it's one of the most fundamental problems in theoretical astrophysics, and it's of great importance to observations. What Andrew and Stan did, they followed the standard model, which is Shakura-Sunyaev prescription how to parameterize our ignorance, and they use alpha viscosity. And this is a picture taken from the publication from 1999, but I think the picture was done a little bit earlier. And you see the difference compared to the movie, that this region in the funnel is now evacuated. They found an outflow from the torus, which was accreting by using Shakura-Sunyaev prescription. But the outflow initially was too weak to go against the infalling gas in the polar funnel. So out of the two options I mentioned, the simulations indicated that they have to wait for the gas to be accreted. Now, one of the things which we try to improve, but has some effect on that conclusion that they have to wait, was that the inner radius of the computational domain was still relatively far from the black hole, meaning that in the calculation, they were not capturing the most inner part of the accretion flow, meaning that the jet, if they included, may be strong enough to go against the infalling envelope. And those details, as many, many things in a computational astrophysics, are very important and should be realized. So I just mentioned them. Is that in their calculation, the computational domain was between about 10 to nearly 10,000 black hole radii. What they found is that the numerical results agree with semi-analytical one-dimensional steady-state calculation done by Povenwoodsley and Frye. In particular, they found that the density, temperature, and some other quantities change with radius the same way as the numerical calculation. Well, they do have in common the microphysics, because both assume Shakura-Sunyaev description for viscosity and angular momentum transfer. One important thing to remember is that they say that jet is collimated by the stellar envelope. So the fact that there's a stellar envelope there is not only the bad thing. It also helps to collimate the jet. And jet collimation is one of the key problems in all the studies of production of jets. How to collimate them? There are generally two ways of doing it, internally, that you say refer to some magnetic hoop stresses, or externally. And their simulation indicates that collimation by the envelope is quite efficient. And it's related to gamma ray bursts so much because, as we heard, collimation is very, very important. The jets in gamma ray bursts ought to be very narrow. So the models are that we specify what kind of mass star we want to simulate. So we decide upon its total mass before the collapse. So in this case, it would be 25 solar masses. And we wait for the star to end its life as a star, meaning that we run out of the thermonuclear fuel. So we have a core made of iron only. And its mass initially is somewhere around 2 solar masses. And in the calculations I will show you in a minute, we don't have to follow the evolution of the entire star, we can focus on the inner part, with the logic being that if the jet will penetrate through the fastest, densest parts of the envelope, it will probably survive going through the outer parts of the envelope. And I think we will hear more about penetration, propagation of jets through the outer parts soon after my talk. Now, we have to all pay tribute to people who've been working on a theory of magnetic jets. This is Blanford, Kenigel, Judico, Pruitt, and more recently, Blackmore. But there are many, many others. What we want to think here is about two effects. One is so-called Blanford and Payne effect, when we want the field to be very strong and rigid. The other is Blanford and Snaig effect, where we rely on the rotational energy, not of the accretion flow, but rather of the accretor, which is, in this case, a black hole. All these theoretical models and ideas have been tried to, people have tried to simulate from first principle and to go beyond the assumptions and simplifications and restrictions people are forced to when they do analytical models. And I will just mention a few. Most related to this talk is work by Mizuno et al. There are two papers, but there's also an active group in Calgary, the Villiers staff and Oin. And there's all of that, I think, community has benefited from many, many years of efforts by people like John Holly, Charles Ghani, and more recently Jonathan McKinney, who tried to study jets and outflows from first principles in a most generic way. So I'll be referring every now and then to the findings, assumptions, and statements that typically came from some of those people. So our model is designed the way that we take everything from McFadden and Woosley, but we expand the physical regime of this model. Instead of sticking to Heydrich limit, we will explore ideal MHD limit. There are two good reasons to do it. One is that if we allow for magnetic fields to be present, we are in a natural, robust way can deal with the problem of angular momentum transportation. There's no need to be ignorant and use alpha prescription. The so-called magnetorotational instability will take care of that in the most natural way. Number two is, being more practical, is that most of the successful jets, models of jets, rely on magnetic fields. So why would we want to skip that important physics? The arrows here indicate the initial configuration of the magnetic field, which is in the field referred to as the split monopole. Basically, if you start with the uniform field and allow gas to collapse, it will create this configuration sooner or later. A rotational axis is here. And the computational domain here is smaller, but we are focused on the most inner part of the accretion flow. So we don't have the inner accretion, the inner radius at about 10 black hole radii, but just less than two. And this contour here shows the region where the iron core used to be. We collapse it all into a black hole, and where the helium envelope is. We used exactly the same microphysics, as I told you, but we add new ones, which are effects of magnetic field. And we allow, excuse me? We have also, basically that they could have, so envelope is made of helium, right? So we photodisintegrate the alpha particles. No, I'm still into setting up the scene for the next set of simulations. So the forces will be gravity, gas pressure, and centrifugal force, and magnetic fields. Now we allow neutrinos to cool, but we do not tap into the momentum or energy. We are now focusing only on the effects of magnetic fields alone, what they can do without any support from neutrino momentum and energy. So we are solving equation of MHD using Zeus 2D, so these are axisymmetric simulations. And here are the results. Here is the there would be a movie of density of the entire computational domain. So things are collapsing, a torus formed. But the big difference in this case, where we have magnetic fields, is formation of the outflow in the polar funnel. So by adding very weak magnetic fields to the general picture of the collapse model, we are solving a problem that we know that an outflow can be formed, can be narrow, and can be powerful enough to go against the falling envelope. It's the dynamics of the innermost part of the of the torus. That's right, because the torus is turbulent, and the torus operates as a generator of the wind, but also as an obstacle for things which are going around it. So once you break the symmetry of the torus, the whole system becomes is not perfectly symmetric. Now, So this is the picture. So I make a statement that it is done by MHD, but having all the data, you can basically compare and compute all the forces and verify what is the main driver for the jet. And this picture is to show the density, and this is the value, an image of the rotational component of the magnetic field. So there are things like that. The magnetic field is the strongest in the funnel. But there are many other diagnostics one can look at and confirm my statement. So now, from the outer big picture, we are zooming in and trying to identify all the components. And the thing is that we identify dense, quite turbulent, highly magnetized region above and below the equator. And you can see this same movie. The torus forms. The magnetic field has three ways of being amplified: compression, winding up, or some type of dynamo. Here, the first one is not relevant because it was a split monopole, so it was compressed as it could be. So winding up and dynamo is the important element. And here is the innermost part of the torus and an outer. Now you can look at this time evolution to see evolution in particular of toroidal magnetic field, which in the disk can be an order or two of orders magnitude higher than the poloidal component of the magnetic field. You can compute what would be the mass accretion rate, and it's consistent what observers infer, nearly solar mass per second. And what is important here is how complex is all this. Torus wind and corona are all we are familiar from watching simulations by John Holly and others. What is new here is the stuff which is falling into around, going around the torus, and a new element, an outflow coming out of here. What is that? When you look very carefully, this outflow here does not originate from the innermost part of the flow. So very briefly, I will tell you that you can identify this outflow as the wind which is coming from the gas which doesn't have to go and circulate. Basically, what you see here is manifestation of very simple situation that an outflow can form from the inflow if three basic conditions are satisfied. You have accretion, rotation, and magnetic field. Yes, thank you.
Questions?
You know, we have seen MHD jet calculations also by AGN people, but always the Lorentz factor has been relatively low, a few. How fast do your jets get?
Those jets at the end of the simulations, which in absolute numbers are very short, less than a second, can go up to only 20% speed of light. So this is just the beginning. There are many issues, numerical issues too, in calculations like that. You expect the fastest parts of the flow to be of the lowest density, yet of the highest, of the strongest magnetic field. And all the numerical codes are being challenged in this regime. So I'm not saying that if you will find a way of solving this problem, all the velocities which people will start reporting will be higher. But basically, direct simulations have difficulties in certain regimes, and it could be responsible for too low velocities or could not. Another thing which is missing in my calculations, but asked before, is in this region, the neutrino energy and momentum can be transferred. Right, not, but anyway, I'm not tapping into an outflow of energy in neutrinos here. The luminosity in neutrinos is relatively high, so that could basically also energize the outflow.
I would like to make a comment about the beginning of you. You made a statement that GRBs, the jets, are different from that these are collapsars, and there you have microquasar and quasars where the mechanism is different. But we have no single evidence that the GRB is produced simultaneously with the core collapse. It is quite possible that it's a late accretion which is producing, I mean, episode after the collapse, delayed actually, a collapse which is very similar like AGN or microquasar, which create the gamma ray bursts. And in fact, there are models for that. More than that, if you succeed to generate Lorentz factors on the computer, not in nature, probably nature haven't heard about it, but assume that you produce have very high Lorentz factors inside the star, you'll produce enormous amount of neutrinos, and you will have you'll get into trouble with the Amanda, with the absence of any correlation between neutrino observation and gamma ray burst.
Right. Well. I admit that I'm a very biased person, and whatever I said in the introduction was motivated, inspired by what I later will be talking about, and the limitations were coming from the tools and approaches I've been using. Whatever I said, it was not definitive and sure. I agree.
Yes, I was just going to ask about the torus wind. It looks on the picture there, there's a inflow from the bottom and an outflow from the top. Does that persist for?
No, it changes.
It changes. And how much energy in the end comes out in that torus wind?
The torus wind, at the end of the simulations, is still not leaving the star yet. Only the fastest parts of the jet is leaving the outer boundary conditions. I just want to emphasize that once we decide that we want to have the innermost part of the accretion disk and we want to follow MRI, numerical restrictions are such that long-term evolution cannot be followed because we have to resolve the details of this time, relatively speaking, small torus to capture the fastest growing mode of the instability. So, this movie is only to give show us some indication what may happen. I wouldn't be insisting on numbers, in particular the numbers about the total energy of the outflow. What is important here is that by just adding this weak magnetic field, we have big qualitative change in the evolution of numerical experiments when we compare them with the hydro case. So that implies that perhaps neglecting the magnetic fields altogether should not be continued.
I have two questions. The one is, what is the time scale until your magnetic field-driven jet set in? And the second is, how did you bridge the time from collapse to the formation of the outflow? Did you follow the formation of the black hole, or did you put it in by hand? What did you do about it?
From the last part. So I did probably say it clearly enough. What I did at the very beginning, I took the pre-collapse model of the star, which has an iron core. And I basically put all that mass into a black hole of the mass of that core. What I did is that empty space, which is left after the compression, I filled in with the free fall material from the inner edges of the helium envelope. So that's question number two. Number one, I very briefly went through, but the beginnings of the jet, you can start seeing after, say, 20 or so dynamical timescales after the torus formed, very quickly. You start seeing things going out, but then you have to wait longer for this to grow and develop to a more powerful outflow that will go against the incoming gap.
Do you have any comments on how inevitable such a process is in a rotating core collapse? Might you expect this to happen at the center of all core collapse supernovae, and we only see the jet in ones where there's sufficient mass loss that the jet can actually propagate nearer the outside?
So, although I emphasize that magnetic fields are important, I am by far not the first one who has looked at that. People have been trying to use exactly the same arguments into the same context of supernovae explosions for 2 decades or so. The issue was always, yes, magnetic fields are important, but I think they would have to be initially too strong, or rotation would have to be too fast. I start with a very weak magnetic field. Let me give you a feeling for that. The so-called beta parameter at the outer in the helium is at the lowest value about 1 million. So the magnetic field is initially very weak. Now, as for the demand for rotation, this movie, how weak the initial magnetic field can be, but also addressing the question how slowly but yet the star has to rotate. I find that even if the rotation is such that the specific angular momentum is about 80% of the critical, so the torus does not form, an outflow like that develops, it will take longer. So now it's not only a question what is the strength of the magnetic field and the amount of rotation, but what's the total mass of the star, because that will give us the limit, how long are we willing to wait. From practical point of view, I end here, because if I will keep decreasing the value of the magnetic field and specific angular momentum, as I said, I cannot follow those simulations for very long time. But I have explored things, and I found that restrictions for the magnetic field and rotation are not so severe as generally accepted. They are still important, but they are not that meaning that people who do calculations of stellar evolution, I think, will be more willing to accept that this scenario is valid.
Okay, I just want to follow up before I give that to you, but that's what you're saying there changes, you know, the answer. I can't wait that long if I want to make a neutron star. So for most supernova, it's still hard to do.
Yes.
This.
There's one more element here. As we wait, the value of the critical specific angular momentum goes up with the mass of the black hole. So there is a limit there too. So I'm not the guy to say that all stars like that will produce this. Some of them.
So I had a question about if you saw in your simulations failed jets, because an interesting question there would be in terms of the supernova connection, that you might have jets which didn't make it out because the baryonic loading and because you had a very big envelope of helium is still too high. So I would be interested if you saw any of that in your simulations and what that would look like.
Something like that for the rest of the week, that there will be a torus, it will be generating magnetic field, but the saturation level will never be high enough, and there will be some torus, some outflow, but it will be all trapped. What I'm saying here is that I've been watching this for weeks and thinking, will it explode or not? So I was courageous and patient enough to see that week 5 something else is happening, and then eventually it's in development of the wind, which can turn into a more powerful thing. So.
Any other questions?
Didn't quite catch it from your talk. Can you tell me actually what is the plasma physical process? Is it doing the accelerating in your jets? You didn't actually say, did you?
Well, I said that the most important dynamical element of the magnetic field is the toroidal magnetic field.
Right.
And its pressure is driving the jet.
So you have no reconnection in there?
No, I do have some reconnection.
So is it?
But, you know, the reconnection doesn't have to be so efficient that it will get rid of all the energy from the magnetic field.
So, is that what it is?
No. No, you're in the torus. Toroidal magnetic field is amplified.
Yeah,
and it is, and its value is the strongest near the equator. And this, and then there is a magnetic force which is related to the pressure of the magnetic field.
Right, so it's magnetic pressure.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
This is why rotation is important here, because this is the source of energy. So the energy goes the following way. It goes from rotation to the magnetic energy, and that magnetic energy drives then an outflow in direction perpendicular to the.
I mean, I ask because I've seen some calculations where it is reconnection driven. I just wondered if you see that in your codes.
No, this is not the case. Even if I turn, I can turn on and off reconnection. Artificial resistivity, I should say.
What magnetic fields are generated if they have pressure coming forward?
Toroidal.
What is the value of magnetic? It started by saying the magnetic
pressure. Oh, yes.
Now you have some kind of a dynamo and I'm.
Yeah, so here's the maybe not. So this is the graph showing some properties of the flow. So the toroidal magnetic field can be here of a few 10 to the 14 Gauss. And radial and azimuthal components are two orders of magnitude. The comparison between the strength of the magnetic field in different components indicates that MRI is responsible for amplifying the toroidal magnetic field. That's one of the characteristics. The temperatures and the pressure are comparable to those found by McFadden and Woosley, which is not a surprise. We are dealing with densities at the highest, about a few 10 to 11 grams per cubic centimeter, and temperatures of 10 to 11 Kelvin. So those values here are basically demanding that we should have certain microphysics included, in particular neutrino cooling. Sorry, I didn't have enough time to present all the details.
Okay, if there's no further questions, the next, we just had a nice review from Daniel about how the jet is made. The next talk is going to be the GRB jet propagation through the star, and that's by Wei-Chin Zhang. Let's thank Daniel one more time.